This is Marketplace from APM. I'm Kai Ryssdal. Our series Consumed is taking a look at the consumer economy as it stands today, exploring why we buy what we do and where that gets us. The housing bust left a lot of Americans owing more on their homes than they were worth and sabotaged their ability to save and invest for the future. It's not the first time a real estate bust has left Americans high and dry, forcing them to start over from scratch. Marketplace's Sarah Gardner traveled to Montana to dig up a pioneer story that's largely missing from American history books, but that does share some unsettling parallels with the recent housing bust.
Finally, they came to a rich, fertile valley. And with deep thanks and prayer for their safety, they began their new life.
Okay, cut the schmaltz. This isn't that kind of pioneer story. This one you might call the homestead swindle. It's got scheming corporations, greedy bankers, and wide-eyed American dreamers. All the characters in this story are dead now, but a few of their voices are preserved on tape.
When I came out, the train was loaded with people coming to Homestead. People were just going crazy. It was just like a gold rush, I suppose.
That was pioneer Lillian Stevenson. A museum in Billings, Montana, interviewed her a few decades back because Lillian, well, she was part of one of the most dramatic and contrived real estate booms in American history. You see, she and over 80,000 others swarmed to Montana in the 1910s. The bait? Well, it was sort of like the early 20th century version of a zero-down mortgage. It was free land, 320 acres under the Homestead Act. And to a lot of folks back then, that offer sounded like a no-brainer.
Especially Scandinavians, Germans coming from Europe with absolutely nothing and seeing an opportunity to establish themselves out west on what for them must have seemed like a kingdom.
Derek Strawn, he's a historic preservationist in Bozeman. Strawn says railroad tycoons like the Great Northern's James Hill, they lobbied Congress like today's K Street pros to get the homestead law expanded.
They were desperate to get people settling here so that they could capitalize on freight rates and that sort of thing.
300 acres on three conditions: build a house, grow some crops, and stay for at least 3 years. The railroads would subsidize your train fare to Montana. Heck, they'd even sell you some of their land for cheap. And the banks, oh, they were more than happy to lend you lots of money, even if you were dirt poor or didn't know a tractor from a tin can.
To have major corporations and to have the U.S. government saying, we want you to do this, we will provide incentives that make it possible for you. People listened to that and they thought to themselves, how can we go wrong?
Sounds scarily familiar? What followed was irrational exuberance, nearly a century before Alan Greenspan coined the term. And just like during our housing bubble, there were good reasons to feel exuberant. For one, there'd been plenty of rain. Montana wheat was winning top prize at national competitions, and farmers were getting top price for it. Billings historian Kevin Koistra.
All of these things are kicking in and lending itself to that sense of optimism.
Outright propaganda fueled the boom, too.
This has always been a droughty country. The railroad put out a lot of false information about, oh man, it was just great out here.
Dale Brown is retired in the tiny town of Terry, Montana, but his family still owns and ranches on his grandpa's homestead, about a half hour outside Terry.
The wind is nasty.
Trees are in short supply here. It's all buttes and broad rolling grasslands.
Up on the hill right through that gate is where grandpa's first house was. And then over there you can see that silver pipe sticking up out of the ground. That was their first water well.
Brown's heard all the stories, how the railroads hired the madmen of their day to help lure people here, the advertising that made Montana look like lush English countryside.
There was one difference between eastern Montana and the desert in Arizona, one snowstorm.
In fact, 320 acres of this second-rate soil, it wasn't nearly enough to make a living. But Dale's grandpa lived in a time of what now sound like superstitious beliefs, like the idea that the mere act of farming the land would bring more rain. Sort of like the belief, just a few years ago, that housing prices will always go up. And both of those myths attracted speculators. David Wishart, a Great Plains geographer, says forget Little House on the Prairie. Many of the Montana homesteaders weren't looking to stay.
The idea was land values will go up as schools and roads and county courthouses go in, and we will then sell at a profit and move on elsewhere. It was all a process of capitalizing on cheap land.
But just like housing prices fell in 2008, the rains here stopped. World War I ended and grain prices fell. Drought set back in and stuck. Farms started foreclosing, banks went belly up. By the middle of the 1920s, over 90% of those wide-eyed dreamers were gone, and they left with no assets, no nest egg, no nothing. Some ended up clinging to the sides of the train, desperate to flee Montana. Pioneer Lillian Stevenson, the one on tape, she told her interviewer the only reason she didn't skip town and go back to her native Missouri.
I didn't have the money to buy a ticket.
Otherwise, you'd have gone back.
I'd have went back. If I'd have had the money to buy a ticket, I'd have been gone, same as the others. I'd have gone.
If you ask people in Montana now, they'll tell you the whole homesteading scheme had a snowflake's chance in hell of succeeding. This droughty part of the country could never have supported all those homesteaders the railroads enticed here. Of course, that's the same kind of thing we all say today, in hindsight, about the housing market crash. In eastern Montana, I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.